Welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, it's just up to the close here, March 15th. Beware the Ides of March. I don't know. It also reminds me of the great song Vehicle from the band, the Ides of March. Listen to that first thing in the morning. Those of you that I sent it over to someone this morning, and she said, I've never heard this song before. And so those of you that haven't heard it, you know, after the show, don't do it right now, but after the show, spend 3 minutes and go on YouTube and listen to it. Great song.
Yeah, I haven't heard most of the songs that you like, I don't recognize most of the songs that you like, is I guess is what I should say. But I think of the Ides of March, and I think of be careful if you have any friends named Brutus around that period of time. So
I think I'm free on that account. I don't have to worry about that.
All right.
Why don't we get into the where are we for this week, Sam? It was a pretty busy week.
Yeah. A lot of economic data that came in, shaped the trend in markets, let's just say, for the last five business days. But looking at the S&P 500 broad index, just down about 10 basis points week to date, so almost kind of a round trip to here. It got as high as on Tuesday, I think, was the high. It closed up 1% for that short 2-day period, closed at its highs for the days as well, but since then it just kind of drifted right back down to where we ended up now. And on a year-to-date, still trucking, though, up over 7.5% year-to-date. And then when I take a look at the overall sectors underlying the S&P 500 for the week-to-date basis, we've got four sectors in the green, led by energy up 3.8%, materials up 1.6%. And I believe those were two part of the trio last week, if memory serves, that were also the top performers last week. Moving to,
I was looking to see, now that we have two negative weeks in a row, when the last time the S&P was down 2 weeks in a row, and to go all the way back to October 27th, so right before the quarterly refunding Powell pivot number two, first time we've had two down weeks in a row. So.
Yeah. So when I take a look at this also, from that standpoint, you have a lot of these high flyers as well, showing a negative print for the week to date, with consumer discretionary down 1.25 points, and then technology down 80 basis points, and then comm services down 30 basis points. So again, a lot of this is those high flying mega cap names that drive these sector performances. So that explains part of the down week for the S&P 500, but those sectors were not the worst performing sector for this week ending March 15th, 2024. Real estate was the worst performer at down 2.8% for the week to date. Moving over to the fixed income side, it was pretty much a straight shot up on a day-over-day basis in terms of yields. For the treasury market, but here we are for the 2-year treasury note ending the week here at a yield of 4.73%, up a quarter, up 25 basis points in yield, and then the 10-year treasury note closing the week at 4.31, up 23 basis points, and then the 30-year bond is ending the week at a yield of 4.43, up 18 basis points in yield. So not quite the parallel shift that we saw down to the basis point that we saw last week, but still across the curve, you're seeing that move up in yield. So with that, given that yields and prices moving inversely to one another, we have the aggregate that pretty much stair-stepped its way down over the course of the 5 days. It ended up down 1.2% on a week-to-date basis for the broad-based Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, down 1.6% on the year-to-date. Looking at it here across the various cohorts that we review here weekly, the bank loans are the only sector up positive for the week, up 10 basis points. Everything else in the red, led by the traditional bond sectors that underlie the bond aggregate there, with agency mortgage-backed securities down 1.4%, U.S. Treasuries down 1.2%, and IG down 1.10%. So pretty sequential there in terms of that reverse order, at least. But also high yield corporate credit was down 43 basis points and EM down a point there. So almost a clean sweep, except for the floating rate aspect of the bank loan sector. Looking at the year-to-date basis, again, it looks like it's just the, so far it's just the traditional sectors of the market all down, and with a red negative sign in front of the year-to-date numbers. It's with IG down, and agency mortgage-backed securities both down 1.9%, and U.S. Treasuries down 1.7. EM is pretty much flat on the year-to-date, and the lower tiers of credit with bank loans and high yield both positive on the year to date, up about, let's see here, 1.5% for bank loans and 65 basis points for high yield. Moving over to the commodity side of things, commodities continuing that, making a 2-week trend now for back to back positive week to date performance. Bloomberg Commodity Index up 1.3% on a week to date basis. And this keeps the positive year to date number that we talked about last week. This week ends out at 1.7% through the first 3.5 months of 2024. Looking at some of the big contributors here, it looks like it was in the energy sector with the WTI crude oil managing a plus 4% week. And it did close with an 80 handle. Right now, we're just a penny shy of $81 per barrel of front month WTI crude oil for the front month future there. Year to date, that's up on price of just over 13% for the year to date. Looking at the various cohorts that contributed to this across pretty much the five broad areas of commodities, the precious metals, the industrial metals, agriculture and livestock, as well as energy, those were all a clean sweep in the green this week, led by both the more economic, you know, the commodities are generally more sensitive to global growth and the economy. Industrial metals up 2.8% and the energy complex up 2.25%. Those really just drove this week's performance. And then when I take a look at the year-to-date basis, the only laggard here is the agricultural complex. That's down 4%. Everything else is in the green there. So it looks like commodities are getting a little signs of life in the past 2 or 3 weeks or so. So we'll see how these things continue. And then finally, we'll end it off with Bitcoin, since it's been doing quite well for, you know, the last, let's call it 15 to 16 months or so. Year-to-date, it's up 64%. Week to date, it's pretty much flat, just up 40 basis points or so. And right now, we're just shy of 69,000 a Bitcoin right there. So that pretty much rounds up the week in markets, Jeff. What did you see in the macro front?
Yeah, Sam, I was going to say that up 40 basis points on it for Bitcoin, that's might as well be down.
That's a coin flip across the flat mark, right?
Yep. All right, let's see. Let's go back to the economic data, the data releases. We did get the NFIB small business report on Tuesday. Normally, we don't cover this, but one of the things I thought was interesting was the quote from the commentary said, "Although the economy has not tanked, the edges are starting to fray." So that was kind of the highlight of that report. We also got the big news on Tuesday was CPI. CPI month over month came in, so the February came in at 0.4%, right on expectations. It was 0.3% last month, so a tick up there for CPI. Core CPI, so ex food and energy, was up 0.4% also. It's actually expected to be 0.3, so a little bit hotter than expected there. That's flat versus last month. That would bring the headline CPI to 3.2% from a 3.1% expectation and a 3.1% last month. And that would bring core CPI to 3.8, up from a 3.7 expectation and a 3.9 last month. So kind of a flip-flop there from core. We did have a 0.68 number rolling off in terms of headline year-over-year core. Core CPI, we had a 0.68 rolling off. So that 0.4 led to that decrease in CPI. But if we look at that's the highest kind of print we have in the pipeline here. We have a kind of a 0.8 average rolling off from here to the end of the year. So it's going to be some hard work for CPI to actually go down from here, given kind of where those numbers have been playing out. So this is where we're going to have to see. We're going to have to look and see this be a little bit more data dependent. If we also look at the different kind of breakdowns that some of the regional banks do, or the sticky CPI from the Atlanta Fed that came in at 4.4% year over year, That's if you look at that trend line, it's coming down very, very slowly. Over it was a 0.3 month over month. We look at the median CPI, that's from the Cleveland Fed. So that one, they really just look at whatever they take all the different categories, look at the median one. That's at 4.6%. Again, that's also trending down very slowly, and it was a 0.4% month over month. And then the so-called 16% trimmed mean CPI, where they take the top 8% outliers and the bottom 8% outliers, get rid of those and say, okay, what's left? What's the mean of those? That's at 3.5%. That was a 0.3% month over month. And that's also trending down very, very slowly. So just looking at the CPI data, you can kind of see why we did have a rate rally, and the fact that the inflation really isn't coming down as fast as maybe the Fed would want, or certainly not as fast as the market was expecting CPI to come down. We go to Thursday, we did get the retail sales numbers, and that came in at 0.6%. It was expected to be 0.8. At least we got it was a 0. It was a negative 1.1 last month, so that was actually better than last month, but still a disappointing number there. So, and if you look at the so-called control group, and that's the number that goes into the GDP number, that came in at a flat 0.0, and it was expected to be 0.4, so a big miss there. So that was really a showing that, the consumer has been keeping up, the economy has been really pushing the economy to be growing. And with a little bit weaker retail sales, maybe people were expecting that, or thinking that maybe the economy was going to be slowing down a little bit more aggressively than what the Fed was thinking, or what the people were thinking in terms of the overall economy. There were some revisions, and they didn't really change too much there. Also on Thursday, given it was inflation week, we did get the PPI numbers. PPI final demand for February came in at 0.6%, was expected to be 0.3. The ex food and energy PPI came in at 0.3, was expected to be 0.2. And the final demand that brought the final demand year over year to 1.6%, was expected to be 1.2, and the ex food and energy at 2% was expected to be 1.9. So pretty high numbers across the board there, from the PPI. And really, PPI tends to be much more volatile than CPI. Remember, we've seen some deflation in PPI very recently, but really having that those beats across the board kind of reminded people that inflation isn't going away. We also got continued jobless claims on Thursday. Initial jobless claims came at 209,000, almost spot on the nose from the 218 expectation. Continuing claims came in at 1.811 million, was supposed to be 1.905, so a little bit better numbers there. And actually, they came out with the revisions to all the jobless claims numbers. So when we've been looking at it, those numbers have been kind of spot on, or especially initial jobless claims bouncing around that 200,000 mark for a very long time now. And so they came out with revisions. People would expect these revisions maybe to add a little bit more noise to it. But really, it didn't really change much at all. If you look at the total net revisions for continuing claims, then now for 2023 was 17,000. That's the total net revision. So it's a pretty minimal net revision there, in terms of when they go back and look at these models. And so it's not really everything kind of steady as she goes there from both initial claim side and the continuing claim side. So nothing to worry about there. No tick ups there. That you might be saying, okay, maybe we're getting closer to a recession. This morning, we also got the import prices. Import price index for February came in at 0.3, spot on expectations. The ex petroleum number came in at 0.2, was expected to be a negative 0.2, so a much bigger increase from import prices there. And that brought the year over year import prices to a negative 0.8%. That was kind of spot on expectations there. So it was a big spike last month, kind of settled back down there. At 0.2 for the kind of ex petroleum numbers, but really looking at it, this one has no kind of crazy adjustments. This is kind of one we like to look at when we look at and say, okay, what is it? What is inflation soft just from the import prices? And so 0.2 isn't too disturbing, but on the back of higher PPI, higher CPI, maybe that becomes much more of an issue with the with inflation going forward. We also got industrial production today, came in at 0.1%, was expected to be flat. And that we also got the 5 to 10 year University of Michigan inflation expectations that came in right on the nose, expectations at 2.9%. So we're still below that three handle. We've been at 2.9 for a while. So really no The Fed shouldn't be as worried about inflation getting out of control, anchoring higher, considering we're still at that 2.9% level. If we do go and look at how the how the bond market has responded, or Sam talked about how the bond market responded, let's look at the Fed funds futures. We still are showing 0% chance. It's actually 0.08 percent chance of a rate cut here on the meeting on Wednesday, and we don't have our first 50% probability in June. That goes up to 100% probability in July. Kind of have 75% probability of another rate cut in December or September, a little bit more in November, and then actually we're below the probability of 100% chance of 3 rate cuts this year. We're up to 2.9. So remember, it kind of going into the year, we had 7 rate cuts kind of getting priced in the market, anywhere between 6 and 7 rate cuts being priced in the market. We were at 3 last week. We're now at 2.9 rate cuts now priced into through the end of the year now. I've been hearing a lot of talk about the zero, no rate cuts happening this year. Some people are saying, it could be political where the Fed doesn't want to cut right before or right after the presidential election. So if they don't cut in June or July, they're not going to cut September and November. That would leave only December as the only chance for the Fed to cut rates. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's interesting to see the market went from discounting what the Fed was thinking in terms of their median dot being 3 rate cuts and saying, no, you're going to do 6 or 7, to now they're saying, okay, you're not even going to do your 3 that you were projecting at the December Fed meeting. We'll see how to see how the dots play out next week. But it'll be interesting to see whether they still will stick with their 3 cuts or their 2 cuts for the dots that they come out with next week.
Yeah, I
Fine.
mean,
Yeah, go ahead,
I
Sam.
was gonna say it's always interesting to see how quickly the narrative changes from the pundits and how from the either extreme, going from that 6 to even a little bit above 6 being priced in for 2000 cuts being priced in for 2024 to I've been seeing a lot of that zero narrative come through as well, once we started to see the data backed in. So at least it seems like these pundits are being a little bit more data dependent in terms of the way that they're thinking about things.
What's funny is like the Fed, obviously there's no Fed speak this week because they're in the blackout period. But last week, all the Fed speak was still saying, yeah, we're still on pace for cuts. They never really come out and say how many cuts they're thinking, but they're still on pace for like, yeah, we're going to cut rates later this year. And there really hasn't been that much. The inflation data has come out a little bit higher than maybe the Fed was expecting in the December meeting, but you haven't really seen too much of a weakening in the economy for them to start getting worried about things. So I would expect them to kind of stick to their 3 rate cuts for the year, but we'll have to see how that plays out. And
Yeah.
finally, the reverse repo facility is down to 414 billion. It's declining very slowly, but it looks like we get down to kind of 200 or so by the third quarter. Which I think is something that they're going to be talking about in the Fed rate decision that does come out on Wednesday. They're start talking about the reverse repo gets down. What are they going to do with the balance sheet, the quantitative tightening? I think that's really because of the fact that there's going to be no rate decision on Wednesday. It really is going to be much more towards I would think that it's going to be much more towards like when's the first rate cut going to happen, and what are you doing with the balance sheet? Those are going to be kind of the two topics of from the press conference that I think that Jay Powell is going to be fielding.
Yeah, and that pretty much in terms of going into next week, that's pretty much the big data point for next week. There's all the economic data that is fit to print for the most part has come out through this week for them to look at. There's nothing really coming out on Monday or Tuesday of next week for them to really alter course, at least that we tend to see, from the publicly available data. It is interesting, people talk about Jay Powell as being an actual practitioner out there in the economy, having his finger on the pulse of the boots in the ground in terms of getting a handle of how the economic data might actually be translating into real business decisions. So it was kind of interesting in that macro data set that Mark Kimbrough put together for us along the lines of the NFIB small business optimism. One of the quotes from the commentary that he had also within that piece talked about how the quote was that government statistics are more volatile, and in this case, it doesn't seem to square with any of the independent measures of economic activity that they're saying. So maybe We'll see if Powell, sees through some of the publicly available government statistics as well, and keeps an eye on what the small businesses are talking about there, because it's, I mean, as we've talked about numerous times here in Double Line Minutes, is that small businesses just beyond, we call it the lifeblood of the U.S. economy, but they employ almost half of all U.S. Almost all, half of all the U.S. workers out there are employed by small businesses. And when you take a look at the actual count of small businesses, they make up more than 99% of all U.S. businesses are small businesses there. So definitely a big component there. And when you start to see some of this commentary coming out from the small business associations, the small business, the National Federation of Independent Business, which is the NFIB, maybe that's something that Powell will start to look through too as well. So it's always interesting to see what he comes out with in his press conference there. But as we mentioned, that's the big piece of information to keep an eye on for next week is Wednesday, March 20th. We do have that FOMC rate decision, coming out. And then on Thursday, we have the S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing and Services PMI coming out as well. Both of those have been in expansionary territory, and they're expected to remain so as well, with a slight tick down in the services from 52.3 down to 52, and then a little bit of a bigger drop with the S&P Global Manufacturing side dropping from 52.2 down to 51.8. But again, both largely in the expansionary territory. And then finally, we have the leading economic index coming out on a month-over-month basis. That's expected to improve slightly from a negative 0.4 the previous month to negative 0.2% in this print that's coming up for February. But that's pretty much it. So I guess we'll just be keeping an eye on the FOMC next week.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's interesting to see whether the manufacturing PMI from S&P comes out above 50 again, because we haven't gotten that. If you were going to say we wanted that confirmation of the ISM manufacturing, that doesn't come out until April 1st. So on April Fool's Day, we'll get the ISM manufacturing, but that was 47.8 last month. So again, kind of a I guess it's much more indicative of where we are in the economy, where like you can get two different data points, whether it's the NFIB data versus the official government statistics, S&P Global Manufacturing, ISM manufacturing. Everything seems so cuspy that you can go one way or the other depending on which data point you want to use. And every time we kind of get these, the CPI report or the jobs report, which you talked about a couple weeks ago, or I guess it was last week, the jobs report, it's like everything's there's always something in all these data reports for the bears and for the bulls. People can point to one thing or the other, and that just kind of shows where we are in kind of in terms of the economy these days.
Yeah, there's always something in there for everyone's appetite, I suppose. But I guess the most important one is how Jerome Powell digests it.
Yep, and we'll guess we'll find out on Wednesday.
That's right.
All right, since there was so much macro going on today, Inflation Week, I don't that was kind of going to be our topic of the week. So with that, I think that wraps it up for this week, Sam. I'd like to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks to everyone for tuning in to the Double Line Minutes. Please don't forget to subscribe. And also, please don't forget to submit a potential topic of the week. If you have any questions out there that are where you aren't finding the answers for, submit them to Double Line Minutes, and hopefully we can help provide an answer to that. But you can reach out to us on Twitter at, or as I was informed, I should call it the X now, at DLine Minutes, or you can go ahead and send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and don't forget our website's doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We did just post Jeffrey Gundlach's macro and market update from his webcast on Tuesday. So that webcast was titled Cave People. So those of you that I look forward to, and lots of you out there that look forward to his macro updates, that one is nice and fresh out there. Also, make sure to follow Jeff Sherman and Sam there at their X account, Sherman Show Pod, so you can be alerted when they when I guess when or if they ever come back from their hiatus. Thanks for tuning in. I hope everyone has a great weekend. Oh, and have a good St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, definitely a hat tip to St. Patrick's Day this weekend. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Good luck out there. Avoid anyone named Brutus, and be wary of crossing the Rubicon.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.